Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon. Nice to see you all here. Bigger crowd than I actually expected, given the temperature outside. Thought maybe there would be a bigger audience looking in through that lens back there. I'm usually home watching on the Sabbath. Sometimes lately we've had up to 30 people, 30 connections watching. So hello to you as well. We'll talk about something that you've probably meditated about. Meditation is something that you probably do regularly, I think, at least a little bit. You probably do a little meditation, probably did it this morning when you knelt in prayer. But when you prayed, you couldn't help but meditate about who you're praying to, you know, because he's invisible, right? He's silent. And you're on your knees alone, and you think about who you're talking to. And when you're meditating about that, I have some numbers that help me find my place in the universe. Maybe these numbers are significant to you too. Specifically, I have two numbers. The title of the sermon is two astronomical numbers that impressed me lately about our place in the universe. The two numbers that help describe to me the universe. And the first number of the two is 100,000. 100,000 is the size of our galaxy in light years. In other words, if you were to journey across our Milky Way at the speed of light, it would take you 100,000 years. At the speed of light. Well, the speed of light, you know, is 186,000 miles per second. You know, a laser beam would reach the moon in just over 1 second. That sunlight shining in the window back there is only 8 minutes old. It's 8 minutes from the sun to here at the speed of light. But you can't actually travel at the speed of light. You know, the SR-71 spy plane, which nobody could catch, flew just over 2,000 miles per hour. The space shuttle flew like 17,500 miles an hour at top speed. But by far the fastest thing that mankind has ever made is the Parker Solar Probe. Parker Solar Probe is now orbiting the sun in a long elliptical orbit. From out here about the Earth's orbit distance to the sun, it falls toward the sun, whips around the sun in a very close orbit, and then back out to us in this long elliptical orbit. And as it falls to the sun, aided by the sun's gravity, it reaches 430,000 miles an hour. That's the fastest thing ever created by mankind, 430,000 miles an hour. And yet that is less than 0.1% of the speed of light. In other words, we're going to have to invent something 1,500 times faster to go the speed of light. And we have no theoretical way to do that. But let's just suppose that you could travel at that speed. As I said, the galaxy, our galaxy, is 100,000 light years across. So imagine that Adam and Eve were instructed in the Garden of Eden on the construction of advanced space ships, rocketry. And God showed them how to launch a probe at the speed of light, rather. And they sent it out to explore our galaxy. In all of human history, traveling at the speed of light, it is now 1/16th of the way across our galaxy. 1/16th of the way. If you could travel that fast, you could travel to the nearest star in about 4 years. But you couldn't even explore a fraction of our galaxy because the Milky Way has 100 billion stars. It takes you 4 years just to get to one at the speed of light. It's an impossible speed. Now, that's just one galaxy. I have here a picture that I thought was interesting from a book called The Zoomable Universe. And it's a picture of our galaxy and our nearest neighbor galaxy. You can't see this except for Lonnie. You can see this, Lonnie? All right. But in this picture, this spot under my fingertip over here is us. That's the Milky Way galaxy. 100,000 light years across. It takes you 100,000 years to cross it at the speed of light. Over here is the nearest full galaxy. That's the Andromeda Galaxy. And the interesting thing about this picture is that it's to scale. You don't see pictures to scale much when it comes to astronomy because things are so big, so far distant. The distances are so great. But this one is to scale. This is us, and this is the nearest full galaxy, the Andromeda Galaxy. It doesn't seem so far apart, but that's 2.5 million light years. It would take you 2.5 million years to get there at the speed of light. That's the nearest one. Now, this brings up my second number. The first number was the size of our galaxy. The second number is this, 2 trillion. 2 trillion, that's 2,000 billion. That's the number of galaxies in the universe, in the known universe. It's an estimate, of course. Nobody's counted 2 trillion galaxies. You just take a slice that you can observe from space-borne telescopes and you extrapolate to the whole sphere of all the galaxies around us in all directions. The light has been traveling from those galaxies for up to 13 billion years, they estimate. So they come to the figure of 2 trillion galaxies. Might be off by an order of magnitude. It might be off by 3 orders of magnitude. It doesn't really matter to me whether it's 2 trillion or 2 billion. They're galaxies. They're millions of light years apart. Pete McNair once put it that the universe is overdone. And ever since he said that, I thought that was a good word for it. As far as I can imagine as the purpose of the universe, it is vastly overdone. Now, if you meditate about those two numbers, I think it leads you to the question, where is God? Where is he? If he can hear our thoughts when we pray silently, where is he if he can number every hair on your head or knows every sparrow that falls? Is God up there? Is he beyond this galaxy? Is he beyond those 2 trillion galaxies? And I have to conclude from the Bible that he's not. And I think, of course, you know the Bible supports that conclusion. The Bible does not describe God as being in a physical place. He's not beyond the galaxies. I think you've all concluded logically that God is not physical. That's pretty obvious. When we meditate on the size of this physical universe versus what God can do, I think it is startlingly obvious that God is not physical. God is not far off either. Standing before the philosophers of Athens in Acts chapter 17 is an interesting and profound observation about where God is. Acts 17, verse 24 through 28. Acts 17, 24, breaking into Paul's speech, he says, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven, which would include all of the galaxies, and earth, dwells not in temples made with hands. That is, he can't be contained in a temple, obviously. He's not even contained in anything physical. On earth or in space, he's not in a physical place, in the physical universe. Verse 25, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he gives to all life and breath and all things. And it's that, really. I mean, the fact that he is the giver of life, that he's the creator of life, that's the evidence that he knows us, despite our small place in the universe. You know, it's hard to believe otherwise that he would even be able to find us. But here we are, and he made us. That's the evidence. Verse 26, and has made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on all the face of the earth, and has determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation. And I think when Paul says the bounds of their habitation, he means the nations are separated in their places on this earth, I think. But we also now know that there are absolute bounds of humanity as a whole. we are here in the middle of a vast space. We cannot cross those boundaries at any speed that we can reach. Verse 27, that they should seek the Lord, all humankind should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. So how far away is God? Is he light years away? Paul says no. He's not far away at all, he says. For verse 28, in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So when God wants to hear our prayer, does he travel to us? No, Paul says, in him we live and have our being. And that's an accurate translation. As far as I can tell, every translation of the Bible translates it the same way. We live in him. He's not some distance from us. He's in a different dimension than we are, apparently. I mean, for lack of a better word, or maybe in a parallel universe, for lack of a better word, we don't know. I don't really understand any better than anybody else does where God is or what that dimension that he lives in is. We call it spirit. God is spirit, and he lives in spirit. For lack of a real understanding, we won't know until the resurrection. But he can step out of that dimension, apparently, at any time and anywhere he wants to. Whether a burning bush or the burning top of a mountain. In Revelation, in the book of Revelation, John says four times that he saw heaven opened. He saw to heaven. Four times. Now, it's not some telescopic tunnel. You can't open a telescopic tunnel and see across intergalactic space. But it was somehow like the parting of a curtain between our reality and God's reality. You know, he can apparently step through that veil from that dimension into ours whenever he wishes. For example, in the Gospel of John, when Jesus Christ appeared, chapter 20, verse 19 says, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, came Jesus. Doors were shut, they were locked, and he appeared and stood in the midst of them and said unto them, peace be unto you. He just appeared there in the midst of them. Where did he come from? Did he cross space at super speed light? Did he come from beyond the 2 trillion galaxies? Or does he simply step from the reality that we can't see into our physical world? So I hope that if you remember these two astronomical numbers, they'll help you to contemplate the enormity of the universe. Help me to do that when I'm meditating. 100,000 light years just across this galaxy. 2 trillion galaxies out there. As David wrote in the 8th Psalm, what is man that you are mindful of him? And I think David himself, you know, 1000 B.C., had only the faintest idea of how true that statement was, how remarkable it is that God can ever hear and see us. But the enormous distances that isolate us here in space seem to make no difference at all to God. He's obviously not limited by time or space. He exists in that dimension that we just call spirit, but as Paul said, he is not far from us. Somehow, in him we live and move and have our being.